We're almost on schedule, including the omission of one order of business in just a few moments. And so we'll proceed now by hearing from the Historical Commission, Dr. Davis Woolley, Executive Secretary.
President, our report is found on page 153. There are no recommendations, and so it will be received. Dr. Ruth will bring a recommendation from the Executive Committee concerning the Historical Commission.
Mr. Chairman, this is the final recommendation. It's found on page 43 of your book of reports, recommendation number 20, which reads that we recommend to the Southern Baptist Convention that approval be given to the request of the Historical Commission that its operating reserve limits for contingencies be increased from $5,000 to $12,500. This is not allocating any funds. It's just putting a goal out there someplace in the future as to the amount of contingency reserve that the Historical Commission might have. Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of this recommendation.
Second motion.
Motion has been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? If not, those who would indicate approval of this, let it be known, please, by the uplifted hand. Thank you. Down. Any opposition? By the same sign. It is so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, may I make one more motion now? Since this is the last recommendation coming regarding any agency from the Executive Committee, I should like to move, Mr. Chairman, that the report of the Executive Committee as amended by this convention be adopted.
Thank you, sir. This then is the summation of what we have done since Tuesday night in acting upon their recommendations. Is there a second? It is moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? If not, those who favor it, please let it be known by saying aye. Any opposition by the same sign, and it is done.
In the opening paragraph of our report, there is a reference in the third paragraph, in the opening section, to the 125th anniversary of the convention and our involvement in preparation for that for 1970. Since this was written, a very exciting thing has happened in the area of history, and I'm calling on Dr. Fred Mosley to tell us about this development.
Recently, the Home Mission Board purchased 14 acres of land in Northborough, Massachusetts. This constitutes a part of the land that was owned by the Rice family at the time that Luther Rice was born in Northborough, Massachusetts. On this 14 acres was the actual birthplace of Luther Rice. The home in which he was born was on a site on a crest of a hill right here on this piece of property. The Rice Memorial Baptist Church of Northborough, Massachusetts has acquired title to 4 acres of this land and will build a church on this property during this year. This leaves 10 acres for any future development for Southern Baptist work in New England or for any appropriate memorial to be developed for Luther Rice. The Home Mission Board felt that this was something beyond the interest of our agency alone, and during this convention we've called together an ad hoc committee of interested Southern Baptists to explore the possibility of the interest of Southern Baptists in providing a fitting memorial to Luther Rice using this birthplace property. And we're asking that anyone having any interest in suggesting an appropriate memorial or having any part in the development of such a memorial, contact Brother Davis C. Woolley of the Historical Commission, because we believe that this commission has a program assignment that would make it the proper place for the receiving of any such suggestions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mosley. This year we have designated as the centennial year of the birth of Dr. W. O. Carver, who influenced Southern Baptist's program of missions perhaps more than any other individual in the lifetime of our convention. We want to give emphasis this afternoon to the life and work of Dr. Carver, and I am privileged to introduce this afternoon Dr. Carver's daughter, Mrs. Maxfield Garrett, and missionary Maxfield Garrett. Would you both come forward? And they are here in our country on short furlough, and I am delighted to recognize Mrs. Garrett, Dr. Carver's daughter, and Dr. Garrett will bring us now an appreciation of the life and work of Dr. Carver.
Last week, a professor in another of the Southern Baptist seminaries said to me that he felt that we were just beginning to catch up with where Dr. Carver was. Talking about his birth 100 years ago is a very contemporary thing. I think at this time, when our nation is being shaken and the nations are being shaken, we can remember that he's one, I think, as very few among us who has ever kept his finger so closely on the pulse of current events and world currents without having his feet swept off the solid rock of the Scriptures. William Owen Carver was a founder of the Southern Baptist Historical Society. For 18 years, he was its chairman. He treasured Baptist history and traditions, but he was never bound to the past. He looked to the past to find God's will for the future. He wanted, as he liked to say, to be a disciple of the kingdom of heaven, a scribe that is a disciple of the kingdom of heaven, who bringeth forth out of his treasure things new and old. But he said, there are plenty of men to take care of old things. I have a calling to emphasize the new things, because they have few profits. I have no pride in originality, he said, no desire for novelty. I do seek independent receptivity and frankness of expression as I seek to be an interpreter of the word and work of God. 15 years ago, Dr. Carver said, I like to meditate on what I would like the Baptists of America to be and to be doing in the year 2000. That's a word that would sound fresh this week. It's high time we began orienting our minds to such thinking and providing means of preparation for 50 years from now. If W. O. Carver could speak to Southern Baptists at this convention today, if he had just 5 minutes to speak, 5 minutes to say what he felt most needed saying. If I had the opportunity of asking him what he wanted me to say in this 5 minutes, I'm sure he would not say, tell them about me, but he would want the insights that he had and his deep convictions of the things that Southern Baptists and all Christians and all the world need. He would like to have them presented today. What would he say to us, to his people, to the people he loves and feels responsibility for before God? This is what I think he would say. Much of it is in his own words, in quotation marks in my manuscript here. God has a plan, a purpose. Just yesterday, a university professor of philosophy told me that he had directed a student's graduate work for the master's degree on the subject of purpose, God's purpose, in the thought of W. O. Carver. God has a purpose, a plan of the ages. It's a plan for all eternity. It's a plan for all the world. You and I have a part in that plan of God. God has spoken. God is now speaking. Most of all, he has spoken through the Bible. He tells us what he has done. He tells us what he proposes to do. You and I must hear what he is saying to us. God has acted. God is now acting. He is acting in line with His eternal plan. He is acting in view of the total human situation today. What is there for you and me to do? Our part is to see what God's plan is. Our part is to see what God is doing today and to work with Him in doing that. Jesus says that He can do nothing of His own independent initiative, but that He does lay hold on everything which He sees the Father doing in relation to Him, and that He undertakes to do it, and to do it in the same manner in which the Father is doing it. That is what you and I must do today. Since Jesus says, when you pray, say, Father. Say, Our Father. Dr. Carver says, I will dare seek all things that such a father may impart to a child. I cannot pray to Him for anything that will not make me a better member of society. To pray, Thy kingdom come on earth, means the whole earth. We must seek to reach it all with the message of God. The prayer of Jesus is a prayer of action. It's the prayer of the kingdom that is in the making, that calls for all the energy of believing men, mastered and guided and made irresistible by the energy of God. Praying, Thy will be done, is the experience in which one feels the thrill of the eternal purpose grip him and bear him on. The revolution of our times, says Dr. Carver, involves the whole world and all aspects of the world's life. We are truly living at the end of one age. We are already definitely into another. From now on, we must undertake to make actual the world Christian mission of the Christian gospel. I am thinking, he says, of Southern Baptists becoming all that our convictions, our claims, and the providence of God are now challenging us to become in this pregnant century of ours. May God help us to follow on where W.O. Carver has led.
Thank you, Dr. Garrett. The Carver family, members of the Carver family, has had reprinted a copy of Dr. Carver's book, Thou When Thou Prayest. It is available in the bookstore. I hope you will avail yourself of the opportunity of securing this book.
Thank you, sir. The next item on our agenda is the report of the Committee on Denominational Calendar. Speaking in the place of Dan D. Bryson is Dr. W.C. Fields.
Dan Bryson of Joplin, Missouri, the chairman of the Convention's Calendar Committee, is ill and could not be here. The report of the Denominational Calendar Committee is found on pages 165 through 169 of your book of reports, and the committee is listed at the end. I think you would like to know briefly how the calendar is developed. Your Convention Calendar Committee meets with a rather large committee of about 20 or so people. Denominational Calendar Committee of the Interagency Council, representing the various agencies of the convention. And on the basis of information gleaned by the agencies and the committees, consider the various items that come up, and over the years, check the patterns of programming, and the calendar eventually emerges. It is then submitted to the Interagency Council for its observations and recommendations, and then, if there are such, the Convention Calendar Committee reconsiders. The report found on these pages includes a 5-year projection of calendar information. The convention has already adopted the first 4 years. The last of these 5 years, the calendar for 1972-73, is presented for the first time. there are four changes in the calendars for those first 4 years. One of them, and these are noted in the opening paragraphs of the report, and they are incorporated into the proper places in the following information. One of them has to do with the change of terminology from schools of missions to world missions conferences. Another is the change of a typographical error. The second is the obvious change of the convention being in New Orleans next year, both as to place and time. And then a fourth change in that calendars previously adopted is in has to do with foreign missions graded studies. Also, if you will turn, please, to page 166, there is an additional change which should be made. In December 1969, the National Conference on World Mission for Youth and Young Adults will be held December 28 through 31, 1969, but it has been changed from Houston, Texas, to Atlanta, Georgia. If you will make that change, then the report is ready for your action. And Mr. Vice President, I move the adoption of this report as listed in the Book of Reports with these changes.
Thank you. Is there a second? It is moved and seconded that this report be adopted as explained and changed. Is there any discussion? If not, those who favor the adoption, please say aye. Any opposed, by the same sign? It is so ordered. And now we shall hear from Brother Bob Sneed, who will present our special music for this time.
In your program, you will see listed Clint and Jarvis Rose Nichols, who sang so beautifully last year in our convention in Miami. They were not able to come. They are in Europe at this time on a concert tour. We feel very fortunate, however, in having Mr. Claude Gossett, who's on the faculty at Carson Newman College in Jefferson City, Tennessee, to sing for us. He will be accompanied by his wife, Sylvia.
Despairingly come I to thee, no, not distrustingly bend I the knee. Sin hath gone over me, yet this is still my plea. Jesus hath died. Oh, mine iniquity crimson hath loving thee, sin of not trusting thee, infinite sin. Lord, I confess to thee, sadly my sin. Soul this day.
and light, this soul within. Thus shall I walk with thee, the loved unseen. Leaning on thee, my God, guided along the road, nothing between. God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with light from above. From the mountain to the prairie to the ocean, white with foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet.
Thank you, sir. And you'll notice that the next item on the agenda is the one which was taken care of in the morning hour. Consequently, we're back, and according to my time, 1 minute ahead of schedule. It's a joy to present Brother Kendall Berry for the first time, I believe, to this convention as the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Southern Baptist Foundation. Brother Berry, we shall hear you happily.
Mr. President, and fellow messengers of the convention, the report of the Southern Baptist Foundation is found on pages 134 through 136 of your book of reports, which we hope you will find time to read. There are no recommendations. We bring it to you as our report. I know that every agency in the convention feels that they have the best board, our best group of men and women on their boards of any, but I know the Baptist Foundation has the best. We also have a very efficient administrative assistant who takes much of the load off my shoulders, and at this time I would like to present Mrs. Christine Bess. If some individual were to offer to give $1 million annually to the cooperative program of the Southern Baptist, wonder what would happen. Would special news releases be sent out praising the philanthropy of the individual or organization, together with pictures denoting what good that gift would accomplish in promoting the gospel of Jesus Christ in this chaotic world in which we live? $1 million is still a lot of money, and $1 million each year would soon grow into a staggering sum. This is approximately 4% of the funds budgeted by the Executive Committee for all agencies this year. Yet Southern Baptists are letting more than $1 million a year sift through their fingers without giving much thought to the consequences. You ask how? By poor management of funds, especially the reserves of all SBC agencies entrusted to Baptists each year. Oh yes, Southern Baptist Convention is set up for efficient operation, you may be assured. But no matter how efficient an organization is set up, if it isn't put into operation, it is of little value. Southern Baptist Convention is made up of some 20 different agencies, each specialized in its own particular field. Each agency has been established to do certain work and should have the full cooperation of all others to promote that phase of endeavor. If any agency fails to accomplish its task, we should either correct the fault or do away with the agency. Where there is overlapping of work, this duplicity of effort should be eliminated. Baptists have their greatest opportunity to really do great things for Christianity. But what was good enough for our forefathers is not going to be good enough for our descendants. Baptists have always made their greatest progress when they were with the people. Let's not let our affluency cause us to let down. Historically, Baptists have taken the lead in doing the unusual, keeping abreast with the times and people. The gospel of Jesus Christ has not changed, but people have. And our approach and presentation of Christ should be as forward-looking today as we made it a century ago. God has allowed progress to be made scientifically, technologically, and physically. We must bring our spiritual life up to date, or we may be replaced by others or more devious ways. God expects us to serve the generation in which we live. We who are charged with the responsibility of handling and investing the funds of SBC are going to be held accountable for how we use and invest these assets, as well as the return or lack of return we make on them. Remember the scripture about the talents. We too will have to account for our stewardship. Will we be classed as good stewards, or will we bury our talents and await the coming of the Master? SBC is big enough to get the best advice available on all investments. It's time to let businessmen astute in the ways of finance handle the business affairs of our convention agencies. There are plenty of dedicated Christian businessmen who are available, willing, able, and anxious to serve our denomination at the beckon of our leaders. These men will do a magnificent job if given the opportunity. They will not fight for these positions, nor will they oppose the standing committees. Only a sincere desire expressed by the convention will acquire their services. One of the 20 agencies of SBC is the Southern Baptist Foundation, conceived and organized with one of its purposes being that of investing the reserves of any and all agencies of SBC. It is staffed by competent and specially trained Christians whose responsibility it is, with a burning desire, to serve God through our denomination with the same skill and dedication that our missionaries devote their lives. We have set $1 million of new money as our goal in 1968, although we certainly would like to have much more. So far, since October, when our fiscal year began, we have received $655,000, and we have every reason to believe we will exceed the $1 million in new money this year if we receive what has already been promised by other agencies of SBC. We serve nearly all the agencies of the convention now to some degree. Woman Missionary Union and Southwestern Seminary have added substantially to their investments with Southern Baptist Foundation recently, and have indicated interest in greater participation. We believe that every agency of SBC should use the Southern Baptist Foundation to the fullest extent. It will grow and serve only to the degree of cooperation we receive from other agencies and individuals. Southern Baptist Foundation can be a dominant force in our denominational work. One agency investing the reserves of the Southern Baptist Convention can better serve than several small funds or foundations. Southern Baptist Foundation is able, willing and desirous of serving the entire denomination to the best of its ability. We solicit the full cooperation of every other agency and individual. We believe we can get a better return on the reserves of the entire convention than is now being realized. It is a known fact that the larger a foundation, the better it can serve. Foundations are able to serve in proportion to their size. Southern Baptist Foundation earned 5.41% on its general fund investments last year. Southern Baptist Foundation can be one of the most profitable and outstanding agencies of the convention if we can get the full cooperation and support which we think we're due according to the charter under which we've been established. We ask for no more. We should not be expected to accept less.
Thank you, sir. There is no action necessitated on this report, and our next order, item on the order, is the final report from the Committee on Boards. Dr. T.T. Crabtree has two matters that he has to catch up with and on that we have passed by, so we'll be happy to hear from him at this time.
Brother President, instead of two, I've got about seven to catch up on, if you'll bear with me. On page 3 of your Wednesday bulletin in the Sunday School Board, we have learned that Brother Lowell Holder has moved from the state of Michigan, and the name of Roy Adams has been suggested to fill that spot. In the New Orleans Seminary Board, we have been notified only today that Mr. Joe Music has moved from the state of Oregon to Utah, and the president of the Oregon-Washington Convention and the executive secretary of this convention has requested that we substitute the name of J.E. Bolin in the place of Brother Joe Music. Under the Christian Life Commission, we have learned that Brother Paul Sanders has resigned because of removal, and the committee wishes to substitute for a term ending in 1970 the name of Mr. James C. Cowell. The Historical Commission nominees are found listed on page 4 of that bulletin. There's only one minor correction, and that is Thomas A. Henson is across the line from Tennessee into Arkansas, and so that should be Arkansas instead of Tennessee. The denominational calendar nominees, we would suggest, in line with the action of the committee of the convention yesterday, that this become a rotating committee, we would suggest that the first two be elected to serve a term ending in 69, the second two to be elected to serve a term that will end in 1970, and the third pair to finish their term in 1971. You will find listed also the North American Fellowship. These nominees serve by virtue of their position in our convention. You will also note the two nominees for the Committee on Order of Business, and your committee would like to designate Mr. Richard Kay of California to serve as the chairman of the Committee on Committees for the coming year. You will also find listed on page 3 of the bulletin the nominees of your committee for the Southern Baptist Foundation. Brother Chairman, I would move that these nominees and that these corrections be made. And then I have one additional word.
Thank you. Is there a second? It is moved and seconded that these be received and accepted. Any discussion? If not, if you favor it, please let it be known by saying aye. Any opposed by the same sign? It is so ordered.
I want to express my appreciation for the wonderful way in which all of the members of this committee worked and for the attitude of conscientious, prayerful seriousness as they face this heavy responsibility. We voted to make one recommendation for study by our executive committee, and this does not need a convention action, but we faced a difficulty at times trying to make a decision concerning local members on these boards and state members. In this day of jet travel, it was thought by some that distance is not a problem like it once was as far as local members are concerned. And so it was the unanimous vote of our committee that the executive committee be requested to study this and to define limits concerning the matter of who shall be elected to serve as a state member of one of these boards and who shall serve as a local member of these boards. This will be referred to the executive committee.
Thank you, sir. And now we're happy to hear from our president, Dr. Pascal.
Thank you, Dr. Level. May I call attention to the fact that at 6 o'clock today, preliminary to the evening session, there will be a special musical presentation which has received wide acclaim throughout the country. It is called Good News, and I'm sure you will want to be present for this musical presentation. Also, I'm wondering if Dr. J.D. Gray is in the audience. Is Dr. Gray in the audience? At this time, I want a brother to come and stand by my side. I promised and planned to recognize him in the morning session, and it was impossible to do so because of the press of other matters. And as I present him, may I read his own words. Through God's love and mercy, neither of which I merit, I am nearing my 90th birthday. And if God permits me to live until the 7th of June, I shall have marked my 90th milestone. My children, out of respect to my wishes, and knowing how dear the challenge of the work for Latin Americans is to me, are hopeful that my friends might like to make a contribution to Latin American scholarships. I'm referring to Reverend Eckler Smith, a minister of the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. It seemed to me appropriate for us to honor this man who for these many years has had the opportunity of honoring and serving God. Brother Smith, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Today is the 7th of June and his birthday. I mean, yes, June. This is 7th of June. Did somebody say May? Don't mix me up. At this time, I should like to present or introduce the special speaker for this session. You note from the program that Dr. Kenneth Chafin is listed to bring the address. Dr. Chafin became ill a few days ago, very few days ago, and had to go to the hospital. He's out of the hospital at the moment, but was not able to make this convention. I bring you greetings from him. And I quote him when I say, I am more confident of the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ and its relevance to modern man than ever before. I am more confident in the place of the local church in God's redemptive plan through Jesus Christ than ever before. And I'm sure we are all heartened by this word from one of our leaders. When it was known that Dr. Chafin could not be here to speak on good news for the secular community, we invited the man who will address us in a few moments. He is director of Southern Baptist Work in Metropolitan New York. He has been in this great area of the country for a number of years and has served with distinction. I have enjoyed being with him on various occasions. He and his lovely wife have done a monumental work in metropolitan New York. I do not know of one who is more qualified in mind and heart and experience to speak on this subject than Dr. Paul James. So after the special music, which will be introduced by Mr. Sneed, Dr. James will address us.
Joanne Shelton needs no introduction to Southern Baptist. She's been on convention program for several years, always thrills our heart. Joanne, as you know, was on the faculty of Southwestern Seminary for several years, is now serving as Director of Program Music for the Southern Baptist Radio and Television Commission. You listen to Joanne prayerfully.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I once was blind, but now I can see. Tell it.
Dr. Pasco, messengers to this convention, and Christian friends. A daddy took his junior boy to the morning service, and the pastor preached for an hour and 15 minutes. They went back to the evening service, and the pastor preached for an hour and 15 minutes. On the way out, the little boy said, "Daddy, those names on that bronze plaque, what do they mean?" Daddy said, "Those are the names of those who have died in the service." The little boy said, "Which one, morning or evening?" Apparently, a number of our brethren have departed. But I congratulate you on enduring to the end. And I share with you disappointment that Dr. Kenneth Chafin cannot be here for his assignment. I am honored and humbled to be asked to speak at this hour. The one justification I know of is that I speak in the context of the urban situation in which Dr. Kenneth Chafin is so concerned and to which he is contributing so very much as a gifted professor in the chair of evangelism in Southern Baptist Seminary. I come to ask you two or three questions, and the first is this: how big is your world? The world in which you live, the world of your deep interests, the world of your understanding, how big is your world? Only you know, and only you can answer that question. How big is your world? I heard Dr. C. Oscar Johnson say an almost unbelievable thing, that he was a grown man before he knew there was any world out beyond the mountains which rimmed the valley in Tennessee where he was born. It's to be said to his credit that when he found out that the world was bigger than that, he became a citizen of that big world. A Vermont school teacher, counseling a boy as to whether he should go on for higher education, said, "Son, go on to college. For if you don't get more education, you may be the same size the rest of your life." And this can be pure tragedy, to be the same size all your life. Our convention was born in the First Baptist Church in Augusta, Georgia, in the year 1845. Our founding fathers said at that time, "It is to provide a general organization for Baptists in the United States and its territories." But it has taken us a long time to get into the United States. 10 states organized that convention in 1845. We went more than 90 years and added only 9 more states. To be sure, Texas was one of them, and that's quite something to talk about. But this means that for most of our history of Southern Baptists, we have had work in less than 20 of the states of the United States. Though our founding fathers said it's an organization for witness in the United States, an amazing thing has happened in the years since the close of the Second World War. Southern Baptists, probably numbering 1.5 million, have moved in industry, have moved for purposes of education, have moved in military assignment into all of the states of the Union. We are now a nation on wheels, with 1 family out of 5 moving every year. And as this has taken place, Southern Baptists have gone with a built-in concern to establish work for Jesus where they are. We are frequently asked, why didn't Southern Baptists come here sooner? Thank God Southern Baptists have come now. And I think of the young missionary arriving on a distant field who said to a veteran missionary, "It seems to me, sir, I got here just in the nick of time." The old missionary said, "Son, I've been laboring here for 40 years. And when I came, it seemed to me that I had gotten here just in the nick of time." "Oh, yes," but the young man said, "don't you think things are nickier now than they used to be?" And things are nickier now than they used to be. There's no doubt about it. And we can't do anything about what could have been accomplished 25 years ago in these areas which we call the pioneer states. But I remind you this afternoon that we are not too late to do something about the oncoming generations. We are not too late to do something about these tens of thousands of children in our street. A secular society, at the end of every year in America, there are 1 million more unchurched, unsaved people than when the year began. It's been that way for a long time. At the end of this year, there will be 1 million more unsaved people than when the year was born. A secular society, men and women without the Bible, without a Lord's Day, without prayer, without songs of praise, homes without peace, marriage without sanctity, youth without ideals, children without purity, mothers without wisdom, sin without remedy, death without hope, lives without Christ. And we are commissioned by Him to reach all we can for Christ, and to teach all we reach, and to win all we teach, and to train all we win, and to enlist all we train, that the work may go on of reaching, teaching, winning, training, and enlisting for Jesus Christ. I represent this afternoon a time of beginnings, the beginnings Southern Baptists have made in these states from Alaska all the way across to the tip of Maine under the auspices of your Home Mission Board. Beginnings. 10 years ago today in New York State, there were three churches affiliated with our convention. One to the far west at Niagara Falls, organized in 1954. A second in the heart of the state at Syracuse, organized in the fall of 1957. And a third, Manhattan Baptist Church, organized in January 1958. Three churches affiliated with our convention. No church at that time in any one of the six New England states, no church at that time in the state of New Jersey, which is the most densely populated state in the Union. And I say it to the glory of God. I say it to the credit of our convention. I say it to the vision of the leaders of our Home Mission Board that now, at the end of these 10 years, in that same area, we have nearly 80 churches. We have about 40 church-type chapels. In the metropolitan New York area, we have 50 congregations. 30 of these are organized churches. And I would set before you three letters. I call it TPA. TVA is well known. I'm talking about top priority area. TPA. Where would you say it is in the United States? Again, I ask, how big is your world? How big is your country? Do you consider where you live the top priority area? Priority needs, certainly. But may I suggest that the top priority area in America is that area which extends from Boston, Massachusetts, across New York City, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Chicago, on up into the middle part of our land, perhaps Minneapolis, St. Paul. In this area live about one half of the people in these states. In this area are the great centers of education, the centers of government, nationally and internationally, the centers of finance, the centers of commerce. In this area is the heterogeneous language belt, the peoples of the world that have come to our shores. This is top priority area for Southern Baptists. We have made a beginning. There's so much more to be done. I ask a second question. How big is your world? And have you seen New York City? You are thinking about it today. As that slow procession, which began at 5:30 this morning, moves through St. Patrick's Cathedral by the bier of the late Senator Robert Kennedy, The hopes of millions of people have been shot down. And this is symbolized by that long procession today. You are thinking about it. You have looked at New York City, maybe as a tourist, and you haven't seen very much. If you have gravitated for those 3 or 4 days and nights down around Times Square, 42nd Street, and then gotten on the plane to go home and said, I don't know how anybody can live this way. And as a matter of fact, the people in New York don't. This is where tourists come to look, but so often they don't see. And I'm asking you, have you seen New York? For we must see the city before we can love it. And we are not asked to like it, but we are called to love it. We must see it before we can love it, and we must love it before we can serve it. Dear friends, I think it is imperative that we see New York City and serve it in the name of Jesus Christ, because what New York City is and has been for some time, America is rapidly becoming. Have you seen it? I ask you to see New York. I ask you to see its buildings. This is one of the most obvious things about it. This is a part of that which makes it the world's most fabulous island. In these buildings are housed the offices of $1,200 million corporations and $27 billion corporations. And an interesting number of Southern Baptist laymen are in these offices, and they serve with us, and they seek to minister with us, and we have a ministry to them. What have you seen as you have gone to the top of the Empire State Building? If it's been a clear day, you have had visibility out, 12, 15, 18 miles. In that area are some 15 or 16 million people. People speaking about 80 different languages. In that area is the world's largest complex of cities. Nowhere else on this globe are so many cities contiguous to each other as right there in metropolitan New York. Cities. And half of the people that you might see as you look out over this area from the top of the Empire State Building have no connection with any church of any kind. But I would ask you to see beyond this. I would ask you to see over the area covered by our association, 75 miles up the Hudson Valley, 75 or 80 miles out to the east on Long Island, the same distance out over North Jersey to Dover and over close to the Pennsylvania line, down to the south over Staten Island and the Narrows through which the ships go out to sea, 33 counties, 20 million people, the world's major metropolitan region, on our shore, right here. You have looked. Have you seen it? See Central Park. It's easy to see from the top of the Empire State Building. At the southwest corner of Central Park, in lease facilities, is Manhattan Baptist Church. Not a big church, never has been, because it is a part of the church-centered missions program of your home mission board. And that means that about as fast as we can, we start chapels. And on Staten Island, 2 weeks ago, we organized the 17th church to come out of relationship to Manhattan Baptist Church. There have been 17 chapels affiliated with that church, which are now churches. And in 10 years, 2,300 members have been lettered out of that church. And our dear missionary Joe Skaggs from Nigeria, spending time in New York City several years ago, invited a Jewess and her husband, whom she met in a restaurant, to come around the corner and worship that morning at Manhattan Church. At the end of the service, the Jewess said, I have found more love here today than in the 20 years I have lived in New York City. You have looked, have you seen this? The witness that is yours on 57th Street. See the campuses. There are 59 graduate schools in our city, enrolling 300,000 graduate students. and 10,000 of these are international students. Mrs. James and I had 9 Muslims in our apartment for an evening. We alternated in the seating with young people from the Manhattan Church at the time we were in the pastorate there. We took time to get acquainted and then to introduce each other. 9 Muslims. One of them was the president of the Muslim League on the campus of Columbia University. These men are now back in Afghanistan, from which they came for special training in our city. These men are a part of the government apparatus of Afghanistan and the industrial complex of Afghanistan, where we have no Southern Baptist missionaries because it is Muslim country. But they have sent their choice leaders to us. What are we doing about it? One of our foreign missionaries in Tokyo invited a keen Japanese student to come to a service in one of our churches. The young man said, "I don't know why you're so excited about me. I spent 4 years on a campus in the United States, and no one has yet invited me to worship in a Baptist church over there. These have come to our shores. Have you seen them? What do you see when you look at this great complex of cities? See the ships, steamships in America's largest port, airships in the sky over our city, 185 of them stacked up in a single hour on a recent night over New York City? Which is simply another way of saying to us, this is the financial and commercial and educational and cultural center of the world. This is the nerve center of our American life. What is America's major evangelical body doing about America's biggest city and the world's biggest complex of cities? I ask you to see the streets. We have 6,000 miles of streets in the 5 boroughs of New York City. On those streets, we have 100 fighting street gangs. Half of them are girl gangs, and they're just as vicious as the fellows. They come along and snap the antenna off your automobile and make a deadly weapon out of it. Our son went with us a little more than 10 years ago from his senior year in high school in Atlanta. Became a student in the Benjamin Franklin High School on the East River in East Harlem. After a few days, we said, "Ed, how's it going?" He said, "Well, it's about 5/8 Negro, 3/8 Puerto Rican, and me." And that's about the way it was. And he said other things about it. He said, "These are not bad kids. I know when they're going to have a rumble on the street. These are not bad kids. These are kids that don't have half a chance. And if I was in their shoes, I'd probably act just the way they act." See the streets. See the well-dressed woman on the street. Mrs. James came up behind her on Fifth Avenue. Couldn't help but see that she was carrying a book entitled, "For Those Who Find It Difficult or Impossible to Believe in God." And it was one of these lip-biting situations. Should I approach her? Would I be rude to talk to her? What should I do now in terms of a Christian witness? And finally, Mrs. James, coming alongside, said, "I can't help but see the book you are carrying, and I simply want to say that I know God. I have come to know him in Jesus Christ." And this beautifully dressed, cultured woman, apparently a woman of wealth, said, "I'm seeking for something, and I don't know what it is." You have looked. Have you seen the street? Have you seen Harlem? And what does America's biggest body in Protestant family have to say to America's major ghetto? Oh, geographically, it's not so big. 2.5 miles from north to south, just north of Central Park. 1 mile from east to west. And in that little area, geographically, live 1 million people. And I heard a speaker in New York City last week say something I've not been able to check out, but I give it to you as he gave it to us. If the population of America were put into the 5 boroughs of New York City, and Harlem was left exactly the way it is, there would be more people in Harlem than in any other borough of New York City. They live in apartments owned by somebody else who won't repair them, who makes money out of them, and that's all he wants out of them. They are rat infested. In Harlem Hospital, every night, between 20 and 30 mothers come with babies in arms whose earlobes and toes have been bitten off by rats. 57% of the children of Harlem have no daddy. And a man we call a rabble-rouser comes through and says, throw a Molotov cocktail in the building, burn it up. What's the difference? And people don't know what the difference is. Burning up a rat trap. 1 million people living in an area like that. Have you seen it? Have you seen Harlem? I'm glad to tell you that 3 weeks from tonight, the Patmos Baptist Church will be organized on 125th Street and 7th Avenue in Harlem. That chapel is in our association. I'm glad to tell you that Dr. Roderick Loney, a PhD graduate of Wheaton College, a man from Trinidad, one of the most faithful members of our First Baptist Church in Brooklyn, is giving up a very lucrative job with the government because he has said it's blind alley situation. I can take them just so far in this learning process. And then I want to say, now, Christ is the real answer to your need, and I'm not permitted to say it. He is giving this up. And your home mission board is employing him, and Mrs. Loney, and they are renting a sorry situation, to be sure, on 147th Street at 8th Avenue. Storefront, where Rod Loney is going to have a street school and take advantage of all the contacts he has made as a high-paid government leader and tell these people, as he teaches them how to get a job, how to read, how to get the training they need to get a job, as he tells them about Jesus. Have you seen it? I ask you to see Brooklyn, the Bushwick area. 12 Panamanians came to us on a rainy Sunday when we were preaching at Times Square in rented facilities 9 years ago. They said, we're Southern Baptists too. We've lived in Panama. We now live in Brooklyn. We'd like to be a part of this witness here. Today, that is a church of 550 members. They have sponsored two chapels that are churches in the Bronx. They sponsor a Spanish chapel that is becoming a church in Brooklyn. They have sponsored a church of French-speaking Haitians whose pastor, related to our convention, preaches in French. They sing hymns in French. And in New York City, there are 60,000 French-speaking Haitians. We have no work in Haiti. They are on our shores. They are in our city. Does it make you a missionary to get in an airplane, get on a ship, and go to a distant port? Aren't you just as much a missionary if right here you seek to minister to the people on these streets and in these situations? I ask you to see Ebbets Field, where the Dodgers used to play. It's now a high-rise apartment. And a Southern Baptist Sunday School is held in the community room. As the pastor and the people of the Highland Avenue Church have come down and said to the management, we have a ministry to render. We'll show moving pictures on Saturday morning. We want the community room for Sunday school on Sunday morning. I wonder what Coney Island means to you. The roller coaster and the recreation area. It used to be that. Some of the highest high-rise apartments in our city are now on Coney Island. I ask you to see the streets of Brooklyn, in the Greenpoint area, where we have a Polish church. One of our US-2 workers, driving her car to that Polish church to conduct a weekday ministry, said, I don't dare stop back three blocks and say to the kids in the street, we have something up here in the church going on, because if I did, they'd flock in there and we have no place to put them. 500,000 Polish-speaking people in our city. Southern Baptists have no witness in Poland. It's behind the Iron Curtain. God is saying, here are 500,000 of them. What are you going to do about them? Oh, you say they're long gray beards, aren't they? And people with one foot in the grave and hardened in Catholicism. No. These are children in the streets who can be reached. We've effectively reached into two or three gangs in the Greenpoint area of Brooklyn. They can be reached, but you have to see them before you can love them, and you have to love them before you can serve them. I'd have you go just out a little bit into Nassau County, where the faithful pastor of the Central Nassau Church, who's here this afternoon with his wife, conducts a teen center, and we call it the Arena. And these are high school dropouts, too. But we have that open nearly every night, a teen center, the rent of which is paid by money you give faithfully through the Annie Armstrong offering and the cooperative program. We call it the Arena. Some of the more conservative people at the church say, yeah, that's where the Christians are thrown to the lions. Well, sometimes it seems that way. These are the kids that nobody's trying to reach. And our pastor's in there because he said, I suddenly discovered that 43% of the population of my community is under 25 years of age. Have you seen that? Have you looked? Leaprock City. An apartment complex in which nearly 20,000 people live. In 20 17-story apartments. We've gone into the community room there. Your money is helping us to rent ground-level apartment where we have a family center, Bible study, teaching English to Japanese wives, teenage center, counseling ministry, as Don Rimes and his family seek as Southern Baptist leaders to move into the complex, which is the high-rise apartment. And from the top of the Empire State Building, you're looking out over Newark, New Jersey. Riots there last summer. Do you know why? It's the nation's highest percentage of substandard housing. It's the nation's highest percent of incidence of crime, venereal disease, tuberculosis, maternal mortality, population turnover. This is Newark, New Jersey. We don't yet have a church in Newark. We have a Spanish-speaking chapel because one person out of 10 in the New York City area speaks Spanish. And under the leadership of Leobardo Estrada, you have moved in to establish these points of ministry with language people. They took Fanny Crosby and her blindness into lower New York City. She felt something she couldn't see. When she got back to her room, she wrote, down in the human heart, crushed by the tempter, feelings lie buried that grace can restore. Touched by a loving hand, wakened by kindness, chords that are broken will vibrate once more. Southern Baptists are there to render this ministry. West of Newark, Morris County. Delightful community. Madison, 17,000 people. Two universities. One little Negro Baptist church, and it's the only witness they've had in the name of Baptist for 100 years. Until some people just like you moved in there to live, and then went on into the Newark area to work, or on into the city, New York City, to work. And now it's a church of about 450 members. And the Madison Church has sponsored two chapels that are now churches, and they are now sponsoring four chapels that will become churches. Just to the north is Bergen County. 1 million people, one Southern Baptist church. And out to the east, Long Island, stretches out into the Atlantic like a finger, 120 miles. In the heart of it, our first work was started at Farmingdale. President of the local bank said, "I'm a native of Farmingdale. I've seen this area grow from 5,000 people to 100,000 people, and we've got the same little churches and the same few people attending them. And I thank God that Southern Baptists are coming in to establish a witness in this burgeoning population." West Point. This is a part of the area in which we serve. I went up there the other night. I was with our BSU leader in one of the bi-weekly services with cadets in BSU. The leader said, "We're going to open the service by singing, 'Why Do I Sing About Jesus?'" These dear fellows, at the end of a hectic day, with all the tensions of the discipline of the point, opened up and sang, "Why Do I Sing About Jesus? Why is he precious to me? He is my Lord, my Savior. Dying, he set me free." I tell you, it lifted burdens out of my heart to hear these future Army officers of Uncle Sam singing the praises of Jesus Christ. The 2,200 men at the point. New buildings are being erected at the cost of millions of dollars to double the population at the point and make it 4,400 men at West Point Military Academy. Any way you look at it, this is mission field. I think that's why, when going up to speak, as I have sought to speak to you from the platform of our Southeastern Seminary, going down the middle aisle, one of our veteran missionaries, foreign missionaries, put both hands on my head, pulled me down close, and whispered in my ear, and this is what he said: "When you get up there, don't hesitate to tell these people you're on the world's biggest mission field." Dear friends, I didn't say that. She said it. After years of service for Jesus, on the other side of the globe, coming back to the United States with all of its needs, and saying as she looks at this, which I hope you can see, it's the world's greatest mission field. And it's right here. And what happens if there has repercussions all around this globe. And it's a part of that which we call home missions, and it's a part of the responsibility of Southern Baptists. My final question is this: how great is your concern, and how deep is your personal commitment? Project 500, in the years 1968 and 69, starting 500 new points for Christ in the United States. 50 of these are projected for metropolitan New York. We have carefully selected them. We have prayed over them. We have the 50 points into which we want to move. We feel that there are more open doors for our witness than we can possibly enter. But now we are being told to put on the brakes. Do you know why? We have not yet met the goal for the Annie Armstrong offering for this year. And we had hoped to meet that goal and then go $1 million beyond it for Project 500. And it's only reasonable that the leadership of our home mission board should say we're going to have to decelerate the open doors, to be sure, but the money is not available. I think if we see, we will give. I served as your representative 4 years ago on a team of four men visiting our Baptist churches in the Soviet Union. It was a dark, wintry night. We had been seated at the table of Jacob Zhidkov, who was a Baptist preacher before there was a Russian Revolution, and who is now with his Lord. We were about to go, and Harold Stassen said, representing the American Convention on that team, Harold Stassen said, "Dr. Zhidkov, Do you have any word for us to carry back to your brethren in the United States? This dear man deliberately, slowly said, brethren, in the Revelation, the living Christ said to a church, "Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it." Then he added, "Brethren, sometimes that door is only half open, and then you have to turn sideways to get through. But all the time you thank the Lord that the door isn't shut." 9 o'clock the next morning, a plane out of one of the Moscow airports, a brief stop in Paris. 9 o'clock that night, coming into Kennedy Airport, New York City, putting my feet again on the soil of this beloved country, breathing again the fresh air of freedom which our brethren in Russia know nothing about. My prayer ever since has been this: oh God, help us to see the open doors which no man has shut, and help us to enter them in the name of Christ. Help us when we look to see the people for whom Jesus died and to whom we have been sent. Help us to see the people.